Grant and Danny, sponsored exclusively by the law firm Condori and Murad. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. They're our good buddies. Let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude is the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. I want to talk NFL with our pal Ryan Wilson, CBS Sports. They've got their eye on the NFL. And Ryan, today you guys had your eye on a blockbuster June trade. We don't see many of these. The Steelers get Jalen Ramsey and Jonnu Smith in a pick swap that saw Minkah Fitzpatrick, a couple of three-time All-Pros on the move with Fitzpatrick going back to Miami. What did you make of this deal?
Hey, guys, good to talk to you. Yeah, so June 30th, usually NFL shuts down for a couple weeks here before we could go into the training camp. So this was certainly a big surprise this morning. And the news sort of trickled out, right? Jalen Ramsey broke the news that he was going to Pittsburgh. And I thought that was curious and perhaps even a little interesting because it felt like maybe he would end up back on the West Coast, maybe with the Rams where he won that Super Bowl. And then you find out that Minkah Fitzpatrick's going the other way. Minkah obviously was traded from Miami back in 2019 to Pittsburgh. He wasn't happy there at the time with Brian Flores, who was the coach, and obviously things have changed in terms of who the head coach is now, Mike McDaniel. But a couple things. So, and Jonnu Smith was included in that deal in terms of the tight end moving from Miami to Pittsburgh, and they needed a tight end after losing Donald Parham to an injury a few weeks ago. But a few things to keep in mind. 28 years old is Minkah. He'll turn 29 during the season. He's going to want a new deal, and look, he's one of the best players on that Steelers team, but he has not been as productive as he had been when he arrived. The last two or three years, I think he's only had one turnover. He certainly provides more than that, but if that's the numbers you're starting with, it wasn't like it was when he got there. In addition to that, if you're going to pay him what should be top of the market money, because that's probably what he's worth, that brings into question what's going to happen with T.J. Watt. T.J. Watt, it sounds like it's going to get paid to stay in Pittsburgh. They're not going to let him get out of from out of Pittsburgh. So you bring in some help in Jalen Ramsey. This makes Joey Porter Jr.'s job a lot easier as the previous number one. You can have one and 1A now. They signed Darius Slay, and they add a potential starter or a guy who's going to play a lot because no team runs more three tight end sets than the Pittsburgh Steelers, so he'll be on the field as well. So you're getting 1.5 to 2 players for one, and if you look at it in that sense, it feels like slight edge towards Pittsburgh. We saw Raheem Mostert come out and tweet that the way that the Dolphins treat their players is – not great, so maybe the edge is a little bit greater for Pittsburgh.
Ryan, Miami, they were the darlings of the league for a while. You know, so the upstart 9-8 team with Mike McDaniel was a genius. They won 11 games. How much fun were they? Last year was really disappointing. You're kind of taking inventory, taking stock here. They're moving on from a lot of pieces, a lot of guys that were pretty influential there with that club. Did they kind of miss their window?
Yeah, no, they did. I think so. And I say that with the understanding that the Steelers are up against it with Baltimore, and you could even put Cincinnati there if you want. But in terms of the AFC East, the most important thing is keeping Tua upright, because when he's been out, we've seen how that offense has fallen apart. And Mike McDaniel gets all the credit, but probably deserves some of the blame, that quarterback two had zero success where other backup quarterbacks have been able to cobble together wins while the quarterback has been out. But in terms of the totality of the roster, they're not in the same conversation with the Buffalo Bills. That wasn't even in question coming into the offseason here. But you can make a case, and pretty easily, I feel like, with Mike Vrabel and what they've done on both sides of the ball with Drake May going into year two in New England, that they have a chance to make some noise and perhaps surprise some people. I don't know if they're going to win more games than they lose, but if you told me they had a better record than the Dolphins, I would certainly get behind that. Now they're moving on from Jalen Ramsey. Their secondary is in flux, even with the addition of Minkah Fitzpatrick. They lost a lot of guys, especially outside of the cornerback position. And their guys, Storm Duck, played at UNC, has a chance to be a starter in that secondary as we sit here. No one saw that coming, probably Storm Duck nor his parents. But here we are. So I think there are a lot of concerns with that team. And if you told me they win 6 or 7 or even 8 games, Mike McDaniel might be in a situation where he's not coaching the team a year from now.
Yeah, he'd be in big trouble. He was one of the darlings of the league just a couple of years ago, and my guess is he would get another head coaching job because of how good that offense has mostly been, and that's what everybody's looking for. But speaking of offenses, staying in that division, I want to pivot to the Patriots and some of the moves that they've made as we talk AFC East here. They will surround Drake May with a lot more talent this time around. They obviously went out and got Travion Henderson in the second round to go with Ramondre Stevenson and Antonio Gibson. Stephon Gibbs and Mac Hollins added at wide receiver. They have three new starters on the offensive line, including first-round pick Will Campbell, Garrett Bradbury, the former Viking at center, Morgan Moses, who played here at right tackle. And I actually think they did more to help themselves on defense than on offense, where Milton Williams and Harold Landry are up front. They've got Spillane at linebacker, huge money for Carlton Davis in the secondary, and they have a dramatic upgrade on the sideline with Mike Vrabel. I mean, what is a realistic breakout look like for New England this year in Drake May's second season?
I haven't seen the Vegas numbers for their win total, but I feel like 7.5, I would feel pretty comfortable with that, and then leaning towards the over, because you can make a case again for Mike Vrabel in terms of what he's done at his previous stops. Obviously, Tennessee found ways to win, not the sexiest ways, but those teams are tough, number one, and that's something you can't say about the Dolphins team we just talked about. And number two, they didn't shoot themselves in the foot. And, you know, Ryan Tannehill had one of his best seasons, and Derrick Henry had one of his best seasons, and he's had a handful of them, no doubt about it. And I think that what Mike Vrabel brings to New England, they were lacking with Gerard Mayo. And look, fair or not, Gerard Mayo got fired after 1 year, but I give Robert Kraft credit for saying, this isn't working. We have an opportunity to get better, and we're going to do it and move on. And feelings were hurt, I'm sure, but I think at the end of the day, it's better for everyone involved. The other thing you sort of talked about it, Grant, they fixed the offensive line, or at least made real attempts to fix the offensive line, especially the tackle position. In previous years, they spent a lot of capital drafting interior offensive linemen and never the tackles, and they did that this year with Will Campbell, and you mentioned Morgan Moses, and then I think they got a little bit more athletic in the center of that offensive line with Garrett Bradbury. Maybe there's some questions still at wide receiver. Stephon Diggs, who's he going to be as a over 30-year-old wide receiver? Mac Hollins is probably a number three best case. They drafted Kyle Williams. We'll see how that works out. But they're certainly in much better shape today than they were when they drafted Drake May a year ago. And Drake May surprised me. I'll be the first one to raise my hand in terms of how well he played under some pretty trying circumstances last season.
CBS Sports' is Ryan Wilson with us here on G&D. Speaking of online experts or whomever, Vegas and company with some of the over-unders, San Francisco seems to be everybody's darling. I don't quite see it the same way. It's a bunch of off-injured guys that we're assuming won't be off-injured this time. Kind of this go-around as we run it back with some dudes kind of getting up there in years and mileage. Where are you at on the 49ers entering this season?
I'm sort of with you, Danny, because I love Brock Purdy. Like, I think he deserved to get paid what he got paid. But they moved on from Deebo Samuel, bringing you up towards ACL, so he may not be available until after the season starts. Ricky Pearsall is a great story, and he played well when he came back last year. But you have some things to figure out. Trent Williams, who you guys know incredibly well, is still one of the best tackles in the league, but how long is he going to be able to do it? Christian McCaffrey struggled to stay healthy, but if he's 100%, he's a game changer, but that hasn't always been the case. And George Kittle is the highest paid tight end for a reason. I think defensively, and that's where they focused their draft for most of the 3 days, with Robert Saleh coming back, I think they're going to be really good. And you know, you guys know Kyle Shanahan and what he's capable of doing. I think they're going to be certainly much improved from a year ago. And I thought Brock Purdy did a lot with a little with all those injuries a year ago. But I think to your larger point, I'm not sleeping on the Rams, who's they always find ways to be competitive even when they're banged up. And then, of course, you got to start with the Eagles, a team that has virtually no holes on their roster. People seem to think Jalen Hurts is one of the worst players on that team, and that should tell you all you need to know. So I think the 49ers win more than they lose, but I think it's going to be an uphill battle to be one of the best teams in that conference because there's so much good football being played in the NFC.
So let's go back to the AFC North. We started with the Steelers, and Ryan Wilson is with us from CBS. The Ravens have been kicking at the door for years. Them or Buffalo? If one of them kicks the door down, who would you say it is this year?
I mean, that's the question. And it feels like when these teams, and they've shown glimpses of being able to beat the Chiefs, but in the toughest moments, it's been the Bengals that have pulled it off. But this is such a tough question. I'll lean towards Buffalo, but it would be a coin flip for me. There was no excuse for the way the Ravens played last year in the playoffs. And Buffalo goes as far as Josh Allen takes them unless they run into the Chiefs. But I think both these teams continue to get better. They both had fantastic drafts. They've had good off seasons. And I think the Chiefs actually matched them in those regards, which is hard to do. Three of the best teams in the NFL, and that, no disrespect to the Eagles. But I'll give the slight edge to Buffalo. But I think it's those three teams and then everyone else in the AFC trying to figure out their playoff positions.
Do you feel like the Ravens are head and shoulders better than the rest of the North? What kind of year? Cincinnati's got a new coordinator after an abysmal defensive season. Obviously, the offense is loaded. I don't think anybody's got to worry about Cleveland, but Pittsburgh's trying to load back up. What's that look like?
Yeah, no, I think the issue for Cincinnati is that they continue to shoot themselves in the foot with the way they handle their contracts and their players. We know Trent Hendrickson has wanted to be traded two off seasons in a row now. Shamar Stewart, their first-round pick, has yet to sign his deal unless I missed something because of some contract language that was just changed from this year and never in there previously. And their agents, I know agents that won't let their players go to Cincinnati. So that's certainly not helping what Joe Burrow is trying to do on the offensive side of the ball when the defense can't get out of its own way. So that's my big concern with them. When the lights are brightest and Joe Burrow can will that team to 9 wins, but can they get over the hump and win in January when they're playing teams that are good on both sides of the ball? I think the Steelers are going to do what they always do, win more than lose, pick in the 20s, and they got to figure out the quarterback situation yet again. And the Browns, they're the Browns. Deshaun Watson's not going to play for Cleveland again, and then their quarterback situation has two rookies involved, and I would imagine whoever the three quarterbacks are, including the two rookies, all get a chance to start this year.
Ryan, looking at Houston, last year, 10-7, won a playoff game. Year before, same thing, won a playoff game, but it was viewed as kind of a disappointment because it looked like they were the new kind of hot thing on the block, and they were going to be the team that was going to go past Baltimore, Buffalo, teams that we already talked about, and they were the big threat to Kansas City, and they were okay, but it just felt disappointing. Where are they at now, kind of in the spectrum of things? Was that kind of tread water year? Do you expect them to be better this year or worse than last year's 10-7 mark?
I think they're going to be better, but I think you're exactly right in that they felt like a disappointment even though their record was the same. And I think part of that was the struggles along the offensive line. Some first-round picks didn't work out. Some guys that they had gotten through free agency didn't work out. And I think they made an effort to try to fix that. Also changed their coordinator. Bobby Slowick was one of the hottest names a year ago, and he and C.J. Stroud weren't on the same page, and it cost Bobby Slowick his job to some degree. I think the other thing that they've done is that they've added even more explosive playmakers for C.J. Stroud. Tank Dell, it's unclear when he'll be back on the field again, but we saw what happened with Nico Collins when he and C.J. got together and he took his game to the next level. They've gotten basically a clone of Nico in Jaden Higgins, their second-round pick, and they drafted Jalen Noel, who's more of a Tank Dell-type player, later in the draft, also at Iowa State. They also drafted some guys along the offensive line. So I think this group offensively will be a little bit more cohesive. I think they'll be a little bit better in terms of protecting C.J. Stroud, and I think the defense is actually going to be a little improved too. We know what they can do with D'Amico Ryans as the head coach on the defensive side of the ball. So I think this team is going to be better. I think they're going to be competitive in that division and have a chance to win it. Jacksonville might be one of the teams to finally play like we thought the Jacksonville Jaguars would, but I think this is going to be a better version of last year's Texans, even though they won the 10 games like they did the year before.
CBS's Ryan Wilson on Grant and Danny. Let's localize the convo. We started our show today talking Terry McLaurin, and we played some audio from Adam Schefter, who says basically that McLaurin's looking for well over 30, which makes sense, kind of what we expected. DK Metcalf got 33, but the team's saying you should be down around 25, and you can find some comps that actually make sense down there too. They're nowhere near a deal, even though he's been the consummate pro who's never bristled and is Mr. Commander, and they're trying to build this culture up. How does this end?
That's the question. I thought it was going to get solved relatively quickly. And by that, I mean, not necessarily 2 weeks ago, but hopefully something gets done before training camp because, as you know, Grant, he's so important to that culture and sort of the transition to the new culture, and you never hear people. We talk all the time about wide receiver divas. That isn't Terry McLaurin at all. They brought in Deebo Samuel, who certainly made a lot of noise when he wanted his new deal in San Francisco, and he got it. I think, I don't know if there'd be a lot of argument. Terry's a much better wide receiver than Deebo, and no disrespect to Deebo. They do different things. But if you're looking at a roster without Terry, there's not a lot in terms of that wide receiver room. There's some young guys, Luke McCaffrey, flashy times last year. Noah Brown's a solid veteran, but is he a number one? No. Michael Gallup has he's older and he's had injury issues. So who's going to be that guy to step up? And we don't even know how much longer Deebo, is he going to be in the roster 2 or 3 years from now? Those are other concerns. So I think you, especially when you have your quarterback on his rookie contract, that's when you pay your most important players. And Terry McLaurin certainly falls into that category. And look, his agent's exactly right. If DK is getting north of 30, and what planet is Terry not getting north of 30? And he has every right to ask for that.
Philadelphia should be favored to win that division. Defending Super Bowl champs, they're built really well, great organization, et cetera. How close is everybody else in your mind, Ryan, in that NFC East?
I think the Commanders are close. I mean, that was such a fun, and you guys experienced it firsthand, and you guys have been following this team forever, it felt like the 80s in terms of how well the Commanders were playing. I don't think they're far off at all. And I think for as good as the Eagles are, it always comes down to this, injuries in December and January. It's going to be interesting to see what the Lions look like without their two coordinators. You saw what happened with the Eagles a few years ago when the coordinators lost, and they didn't look to be quite the same team. We talked about the NFC West, but I think there's every realistic possibility that two or three teams could really challenge Philadelphia depending on the injury situation once we get into the playoffs. But on paper, it's hard to find any holes in this team, and the holes they had, they either drafted or solved through free agency, and their draft last year was an absolute grand slam, even though you could say the same thing about the Commanders even after the Jaden Daniels pick a year ago.
So you don't see a possibility for a major regression where it was kind of a magical carpet ride for Washington?
Well, so Kellen Moore's gone, and maybe there's a little hiccup there offensively, and maybe they learned their lesson when they lost Shane Steichen and Brian Johnson came in.
I meant the Commanders, sorry.
Oh, yeah, no. No, and I'll tell you why, Grant, because I actually was looking at this the other day in terms of the quarterbacks who played a lot as rookies, eight or more starts, I think, and then came into year two, who were top two or three round picks. They historically do pretty well in year two, and I think this team is actually as good as, if not better, than they were a year ago. Dan Quinn's certainly more comfortable. Adam Peters, I would imagine, is more comfortable as well. And I think Jaden Daniels, perhaps most importantly, is going to be comfortable. I don't think whatever Terry McLaurin's contract situation is, if it's not resolved, I don't imagine that will be a distraction. I don't know, but it feels like this team is better now than they were 12 months ago. And I'm the least concerned about sophomore slumps when talking about Jaden Daniels, given the way he played last year.
Ryan, awesome as always, buddy. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
See you, man.
There's Ryan Wilson, CBS Sports, Eye on NFL. Go check him out. Always love having him on. Let's sizzle and fizzle next on G&D.
G&D with you on The Fan. We are exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condori and Morat. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. At 6 o'clock on this program, this particular radio program, Spencer Nussbaum will join us from the Washington Post. Had a really, really, really good piece about the Nationals. And this is kind of one of the big questions that we haven't really gotten a good answer to. This is a great window into the organization where you see them not spending at the big league level on players. Well, this is them, in this particular case, not spending on a device that every major league team they could pretty much find did spend on. The Nationals did not. We'll talk to him about his reporting there at 6 o'clock. We will do that. But we got some other conversations we want to have about the AFC, about what the Pittsburgh Steelers are doing, et cetera, a little more football talk. But now we're going to do something. It doesn't have an open yet, Darius. It might one day. One day it might have a nice little radio open and sound pretty cool. A little thing we like to call sizzling and fizzling here on G&D. I will start with the fizzle first, if I may be so bold. The state of sports media is my fizzle. Allow me to hop on my soapbox real quick. Our good buddy Ben Standing, I'm not breaking any news here, he posted this on his own social media, announcing it. The Athletic is not bringing him back. I think that's a mistake. All Ben is great. He's awesome at what he does. So that leads me to kind of a little window here into what's going on in the world of sports media. This is a Pro Football Talk story, but this is a sports story. A fake quote attributed to Eagles Kendall Lamb caused him real trouble when it spread. Here's what happened. Kendall Lamb, journeyman, jag lineman, who you probably never heard of, maybe unless you saw this story, was attributed a quote that says really negative things about his time in Miami. Basically, confirming, according to some of the folks, a lot of the dysfunction that a lot of people are perceiving from the outside in about the Miami Dolphins. In fact, he never said the quote, never gave the interview in question, and never said anything other than, yeah, I liked my time there. I really enjoyed it. I appreciate the opportunity. And had to do a video to clarify that. The report by some little teeny tiny website, I don't even know which one it was, instead of just existing out in the ether like somebody's blog spot or someone's Medium article or their Substack, it gets picked up almost everywhere ubiquitously. Big major outlets that I guarantee you, if you're listening to this radio program, you have read and have clicked on without any kind of filter. And I'm not judging you. It's not your fault. You're just consuming the information as it's put out there. In this era of citizen journalism, the aggregator, and everything under the sun, this is something that should scare the hell out of us. So he wakes up in the morning, and some people are saying, hell yeah, good point, Kendall Lamb. Again, to something he never said, because they want to take a pound of flesh out of the Dolphins and they're mad. Other people are offended and angry and sending him all sorts of angry messages. It never rises to anything threatening or serious, thank goodness. And he's able to qualify it or explain it away and everything's fine. But that's what happened. He never said a word other than something gracious and kind and was getting criticism and threats and all sorts of other stuff. Again, I don't know how serious it ended up getting in that regard. But he was able to, you know, to squash it and say, hey, this didn't happen. And we sort of lament and shrug our shoulders. The thing I always come back to is nobody reads corrections. Everybody reads the first thing. Nobody follows up when the publication or the outlet or the person in the third tweet down goes, actually, turns out it was 5, not 5,000. Whoopsie daisy. Best of luck to you. So there's a premium on being first. There's a premium on getting the click. I understand all that. I understand the world we're in, but it's a bummer. And therefore, that is my sizzle, or excuse me, that is my fizzle, rather, the state of sports media. My sizzle at this point is all of a sudden, looking around, the folks over at Monumental, the two squadrons within a week of each other, have a bunch of really fun young players that were just drafted here to the local D.C. region. You think of the Wizards and you think of the Capitals. I like the way that this shook out, where you're basically within, you know, a handful of days. I forget the exact number, but NBA draft comes and goes, hockey draft comes and goes, and you get a nice little article from Monumental Sports, which I thought was really, really cool. Look at all these guys. Look at all these guys. All in one nice little single size serving. So I like that. I enjoyed being able to think about things that way. You'll see more immediate impact from the local basketball players first, just the nature of the sport. Then you will, the hockey minors. Those guys will be down there kind of grinding on the farm in the various stops for a couple of years. But still, very, very cool. I like that. I like the coverage of it. And it's fun to have something new and fun on the horizon. That's what I got for you. All right, in the room, who's going next? Rhino, sizzle, fizzle.
My sizzle right now is baseball. Baseball in general, I think, is in great hands. I just can't. I'm off, coming off the high from the Savannah Bananas on Saturday.
Yeah,
I thought it was a lot of fun. And also last night, Sunday Night Baseball, I just watched Tarik Skubal. Is there a more electric athlete in the game right now than Tarik Skubal? I would say no. I think baseball right now has like these young guys who have really kind of turned a corner for baseball and have made it more exciting to watch. And I think baseball just right now is at its peak. Now, with that in mind, I've got a fizzle. It's the Washington Nationals.
Mm.
I love the Nationals. I will watch them every single day. I will choose to watch them every single night. But my gosh, is it hard at times. And yes, we're coming off a really solid win yesterday. But I can't help but just dwell about the future. It is not a bright future right now. I don't see the pieces. I don't know what the Nationals are going to do with that number one overall pick. I don't know where to go, Danny. I don't know what to feel. I don't know if I should be excited because they do have young talent. But also with that in mind, what does the future hold for this team? And I just simply do not know the answer to that question. So yeah, baseball as a whole, great. The Washington Nationals, not great.
I relate to both. I'll do the good one first. Your point about baseball, I think, is right on. I don't remember a time where there was this much buzz, energy, excitement, fun. It's not on a nightly basis. People aren't watching, you know, Wednesday night baseball or Sunday night baseball in ridiculous numbers. I think the ratings are better than they've been, and that's all well and good. But it's just in terms of, as you said, the excitement around the game is as much or higher as it's been in a long time. And you know, as an old-school, curmudgeonly, irritated old man shaking his fist at the ocean, I said over the years, even if my thing has to change some to get with the times, to grow the game and grow the audience, that's needed, and that's what's happened. And then to your other point, you look at the young stars 25 and under in the game, it's insane how many excellent, top-of-the-market, star players there are that can't rent a car without the extra insurance cost that comes with it. With the Nationals, a lot of fans feel that way, dude. I talked to several of my neighbors. I know some folks around the corner that have season tickets or had season tickets and are just kind of going, it's not that much fun for us to do at this point. They live by me. It's not easy to get down there. It's not easy to park. It's not easy to take the Metro. It's not easy to go there and back. And we're not having a great time going to the ballpark, paying the same prices. And it doesn't feel like they're as committed as we are. That's an empty feeling for a fan base, man.
Yeah, it's not great. Now, I will say I had a great hot dog, though, at Nationals Park. So they're doing something
okay.
Well. They're doing something
Which
well.
Hot dog stand? Give it a shout out.
It was actually at Ben's Chili Bowl.
The Ben's
Chili Bowl is just a plain old hot dog, but it was fantastic. I don't know if that's a Nats dog. I don't know if it's just Ben's Chili's Bowls, mm-hmm. hot dog, whatever you want to call it. It was great. I had a great hot dog at Nats Park.
Get in where I fit in here?
Yeah, your turn, man.
Absolutely. Sizzling and fizzling for your boy. Sizzling. I'm going to go with AMC Theaters. I'm a Regal guy. By trade, I will say. But AMC's website now prominently displays a reminder that all showtimes come with 25 to 30 minutes of previews. Now, we could talk about whether that's too many previews. I happen to love trailers.
That's a lot of previews.
25 though. To 30 minutes of pre-movie trailers from your runtime. But they have now calculated everything for you. A lot of times you go, okay, is the start time involved the trailers? And then what time does the movie begin? And how does it end? And what time? And when am I getting out? They do everything for you. On AMC. They let you know. Movie time, 25, 30 minutes of trailers, time the movie's going to end. It's kind of like all-in pricing with Game Time or one of these ticket apps mm-hmm. where I just don't want to be fooled. Don't tell me it's a 110 movie, and then I sit down at 105, and the trailers start at 110, and it's 136, and the opening credits are rolling.
Right.
I want to know everything. So I think AMC being a little bit more transparent, I like that. I accept AMC's terms. I'll give you a sports one as well really quickly. Josh Harris is adding to the portfolio. He is going to be an owner of the new WNBA expansion team in Philadelphia. Harris, because he didn't have enough to do, owning a soccer team and an NHL team and an NBA team uh-huh. and an NFL team.
I own sports teams, bro.
This guy, he likes his business, right? His business is owning sports teams at this point. The WNBA sizzling. They got the Caitlin Clark money pouring in right now. Three new teams, Cleveland, Detroit, Philadelphia, expansion.
Wow.
But if Josh Harris was going to be heavily involved with, if he got a team in, Major League Baseball, I might say, come on, man, really? Like, we don't need to do that.
Yeah, settle down, would you, Josh?
My guess is he's just going to count some money as it rolls in with the new Philadelphia WNBA team, right? That's kind of
You would
point.
Think, yeah. I mean, you can do kind of the Wizards bit or Monumental Basketball bit, so to speak, where you have one guy overseeing all the operations and sort of turn the keys over to him. Maybe you do that.
Not too shabby. Fizzling, Danny, I was down bad yesterday. I took the kids to go see Elio at the movie theater. I bought tickets to the wrong showtime. So we went to the 2:45.
Ooh.
I accidentally bought tickets to the 1:45. It took about an hour of negotiation. Thank God we got there early, probably about 19 minutes, just to be able to make it all work so I didn't have to drop what would have been, and I quote, $90
no.
on Elio. For us to go see the movie.
That's so much Elio.
Yeah. So there you go. Fizzling sports-wise. I think the Nats are about to have a real problem with James Wood getting walked. After four IBBs yesterday for the Nationals.
Yeah.
This is about to be a thing. Get ready for him to be told, go to first base. They had 6 intentional walks as a team 2 years ago. They had 4 from James Wood yesterday. Most of anybody since Barry Bonds 2 decades ago.
Yeah, you play competitive teams who need the win. I would certainly say you should expect more of that.
Has Dad gone?
No, no dad yet.
Dad, you are up.
Look at that. My sizzling. Our friends over at EA Sports just announced today that there will be a college basketball game coming back.
I saw
that. There has not been a college basketball game in ages, it feels like.
We don't have a trailer. We just have the announcement of the game.
Just the announcement, right. From what I gathered, it looks like 2028 is going to be when it officially debuts. So we got a couple years, but this is kind of the same cycle that they went through with the return of college football, where they announced it back in 2022, and then the first game came out in 2025. So I'm assuming we'll start seeing teases over the next next couple of months or so that college basketball is back. So that's pretty cool, pretty sizzling.
That's a big deal. This is how long ago this was, like on the Genesis, the old Sega Genesis in the mid to late 90s. Some of those college basketball games were a blast. So much fun to play.
I think the football game was such a smashing success mm-hmm. that they probably went, how do we not do
we should
this
probably
game now?
Kind of hard to pass up on that.
Get the same people involved, do it the exact same way, and make a game that everyone will love.
Well, everyone was so scared in the O'Bannon lawsuit world where it's like, we'd love to make this, but like if we do it, then we're going to, down the line, probably have to pay $1 billion in back revenue or something to somebody.
Darius, who's fizzling?
Fizzling, I just want my Nationals to win. That's all. That's all I got. I don't have too many other things in my mind today. Okay. I'm just going to say I want my Nats to win.
Very simple.
So that's my fizzle.
How about Terry McLaurin coming back to Washington? That negotiation seems to be fizzling at this point. What Adam Schefter said about McLaurin and the Commanders not being close, and an update on our poll. Are you Team Terry or are you with the team on the current stare down? Next on The Fan. A month ago, when Terry McLaurin's contract came up, at the end of May, we said, of course he doesn't have an extension yet. It's not time for an extension. And you could still say the same today on June 30th. But we're getting toward it's time for an extension. In fact, the last time he did this charade, where over the offseason he was at odds with the team and wasn't showing up to different things because he deserved to be paid, and I was Team Terry then, and I'm Team Terry now in terms of not showing up to those workouts, he got paid about a week from now. This does not sound like that is what is going to happen. Not based on Albert Breer saying they're nowhere near close. He even said that right now the situation is, quote, not good between him and the team. Now, this is not Trey Hendrickson calling them liars and publicly questioning if they actually are trustworthy.
Right.
Terry wouldn't do that, and I don't think that's how anybody feels in this debate. It might even be being overblown, honestly, where they're just kind of digging in and they're not close on money, and so everyone's saying it's bad when really it's just business. I think that's probably very likely. But Adam Schefter today on ESPN with Pat McAfee made it pretty clear, not only is it not that close, they're not getting closer at this moment.
I know. There's no update, which is the update. And that's the problem. The problem is, with this particular situation, I think Terry McLaurin is going to argue that we've seen other wide receivers who his numbers are comparable to, like Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and DK Metcalf, get paid over $30 million a year this offseason. And I think the Commanders then can say yes, but Mike Evans, who also has had comparable numbers, is at $24 million. So there really is quite a difference and a gap between what both sides would want. They have not made any progress. I would think that we'll see if there are any teams that decide to come snooping around.
So here's the question. He goes on to say, by the way, that teams could be calling Washington.
Call away.
Snooping around on Terry McLaurin, try to get their hands on him, and he says, I think they're going to come to a deal. Right now, this second, Danny, percentage chance that you think an extension is signed before day one of training camp?
86.
So you're still very confident.
Yes.
What were you a month ago?
96.
Okay. I like that. I was 99.9% sure a month ago. Right now, I'm probably 80% sure. Still feel pretty good about it.
Yep.
I still think a lot of this is much ado about a little. But when I hear things like not close, someone's telling you that. I think a lot of this is probably posturing from the agent.
It feels agent-y to me.
Because the team doesn't really say as much anymore. I like to say they operate in the shadows. Adam Peters is not texting a whole lot of people about a whole lot of things. Keeps everything pretty close to the vest. But agents are doing their job, right? And agents have, you know, reporters like Adam Schefter, especially, on speed dial. Not to say the teams don't use Schefty, too. You see plenty of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the agents definitely do. So I think, in this case, you've got an agent who's frustrated, or else things wouldn't keep coming out from Breer and Schefter and the likes.
Totally, yeah. I mean, that and it's part of the game that the agent plays, right? I mean, a player doing this, there's a reason you pay the guy to go in there and have these uncomfortable, annoying, challenging conversations for you. You've got to throw your hands up that somebody would dare offer your the client that you represent tens of millions of dollars to play football. you have to, how unacceptable $27 million a year is, right? You got to throw your hands up and say, oh, we're not close. And you're going through the song and dance trying to apply the pressure. That's the game. That's what's being played right now. The same way that it's playing out with the team and the city council and those sorts of deals. And you see these public statements with the deadline. It's very soon. It's public pressure. And that's kind of the same technique being applied here.
82 catches last year for McLaurin for 1,096 yards, 13.4 a pop. He had his best year in terms of touchdowns with 13. Don't forget how amazing he was in the playoffs, too. Game after game in the postseason, he went out and made one ridiculous play after another. In fact, the NFC Championship game against the Eagles, he went out and scored a long touchdown to get them right back in the game. He routinely, Tampa Bay, Detroit, stepped up over and over again. It was the kind of year, the further you get away from it, I think the more you forget with a guy who's just understated in everything he does, how important, how awesome he is. The catch percentage in traffic with contested catches, stuff that a lot of guys in the league can't do. But it's been right around 13 yards per catch for now 5 years. And that's not bad, but that's also not top of the league money worthy. In fact, last year, if you remember, Dan Quinn was talking about what each player works on and how after practice, each guy has their own little thing that they do on the practice field for a few minutes. And Terry McLaurin's big emphasis was to do more after the catch, to make sure that he was harder to tackle because he felt like the year before he was too hard to tackle. And I thought you saw growth in that regard, for sure.
Yeah.
But I do think that that speaks to like where he's at in the pantheon, too. And so they've got to be able to find some middle ground between you're obviously not chasing Jefferson and you're going to get paid better than you have been, which was right around $23 million, $24 million per year. The problem is just the market's so out of whack because you got guys that are really good that are making $25 million. You got guys that are just pretty good that are making $33 million. And it really has screwed up what both teams, I mean sides of the negotiation, Terry's and the club itself, think he should be worth.
Yeah, there were a few really strange games last year. Again, going back to his game log and remembering his season. Remember that he only had one catch and 5 yards against Atlanta? Remember that? Remember how weird that was in that OT thriller? He had one catch for 5 yards. There's a number of those. Two catches for 17 week one against Tampa. Two catches for 19 against the Giants in that ugly game. That loss to Philadelphia, one catch for 10. That's when we're all going, oh no, the cliff. He lined up on the left and Quinyon Mitchell shoved it on him and he was never open. You still got to throw it to him more than that, but what are we doing? And then adjustments were made, but then you get some more productivity there, a handful of weeks in a row. But there are enough of those stinkers, non-factor kind of games where you go, I still know this guy's really good. I'm going to complain Monday morning when he doesn't get the football enough. When the offense isn't great, see that Tampa game, the Giants game, Philadelphia game, a couple others. But I also know that it's not Ja'Marr Chase, not Justin Jefferson, right, not CeeDee Lamb, maybe not even Mike Evans, maybe not even a couple other guys where you don't see that as often. You might have a one, not five, not a third of your season.
There's still just a threshold you got to clear to get to a point where you deserve to be paid. And he has long cleared that threshold.
Mm-hmm.
As the commander through all of the downtimes and the guy right now at this moment who is the face of the program, if not for Jaden Daniels. By the way, the updated poll, Metropolitan Moving and Storage poll of the day, are you Team McLaurin or the team? Whose side are you on? 65% Terry, 35% the team. Go vote on 106.7 The Fan's Twitter page. Grant and Danny on The Fan next. Story in the Post today about the Nats not having a device that helps hitters technologically that all they got to do is spend money on to get that almost every other team in baseball has and swears by. It's not good. Spencer Neusbaum wrote that story. He joins us next.